Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
You go to the game and you've had a time at the pool that day.
Oh, I'm putting my career on the line.
Exactly.
I'm not, that's why I'm not even going to do it.
We're beginning a fist fight with Gary Lawless.
Just mud wrestling with Gary Lawless.
You and Gary.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
All right, Steve Phillips will join us here in a moment. The Jays with a big win earlier today. Their starting pitching actually held up. Their pitching in general, it's been awful. They've got one of the worst staffs in the major leagues based on the stats. That was not expected coming into the year. It was supposed to be the strength of the team, but their numbers have been terrible. But Jay Happ had a quality afternoon. The bullpen held up. The Jays won big, so we'll get into it with Steve Phillips in about 5 minutes. And the whole city, the whole country is still talking about Joey Votto. Yeah. And we spent about an hour on the conversation in the 4 p.m. hour.
Well, people are, they took it to heart. And I can understand, especially around here. I don't know if it would resonate as big out west, but here's a guy who grew up in this area. And I 100% understand, like, he doesn't care about the Toronto Blue Jays organization, because why should you? Like, he's not part of it. They don't pay him. But you should pay a little bit of homage to the city that you're from, the city that you spend time in the summer. Like, it's not like... I can understand if he was gone and never came back. Like, you know, to hell with it, I'm gone. Because I played with guys from the Czech Republic who came over and didn't go back. They live in and they've retired here, and it's fine. They love it. And they don't really have that nostalgia feeling from back home. This doesn't seem to be the case in Votto's.
No, he, situation. By all accounts, comes back in the winter. He lives in Toronto during the off season. He does a lot of charitable work. I think he's a bit of a different cat when it comes to interviews. I don't think he's that comfortable during interviews. I think the crux of the conversation was about James Paxton and the no-hitter from a week ago. I think what he was trying to say was that because he's Canadian or he's from Toronto or whatever, he didn't feel like this obligation to appreciate the moment. But he said he did appreciate it just as a fellow player.
Right, like happy for him.
Happy for a guy that went out there and performed really well. And then afterwards he came out and he's been doing the rounds today. We'll play some of the audio here in a minute. I'm sure everyone's heard it, but if you haven't, we'll let you hear it. But, you know, he said it stems from jealousy and he wanted that moment, or he wants that moment.
Right.
And, you know, Votto's, he's always been a bit of a, he's been a complicated guy to figure out, because I think a part of this conversation could also be directed towards the fans in Cincinnati, who are probably a little bit apprehensive to the idea that maybe Votto's going to want out at some point, because the Reds have been brutal for years. They're awful again this year. They're a joke.
Yeah.
And he's not a young guy. He's 34. This may be, in a way, him also sending a message to Reds fans like, hey, I'm not thinking about going to Toronto. I don't want to be a Blue Jay, or I don't want to get out of here. You know, I'm invested in Cincinnati. I'm invested in being a player down here. I appreciate what everyone down here, all the American baseball fans, have given to me over the years. But why don't we play the initial clip from the podcast? So we've got a new audience here. If you haven't heard it, I'm sure a lot of people have become aware of this story and the controversy, so to speak. So he was on a podcast for Yahoo, and he was asked about James Paxton and him being a Canadian and the no-hitter, and here's what he said.
But as far as, you know, Toronto and Canadian baseball and the country of Canada and him being Canadian, I don't care at all. He or the Jays or Canada in general may disagree with that, but I couldn't give a rat's ass about that because I'm more happy for him. You know, I thought that was a great moment. I get excited. I'm not connected to Toronto, so I don't feel any sort of way about that.
See, that's how I hear it. I hear him saying, just because he's Canadian, I don't feel like I have to love what he did.
And I don't disagree with that. Like, we talked about it a couple hours ago. If the Jets go to the finals, does everyone in Canada have to cheer for them?
No.
And he doesn't play for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Never has.
I don't even know if he knows James Paxton.
Right.
You're and happy. Paxton's from BC, Votto's from Toronto.
You're happy for him. I just, where I felt that he kind of, not crossed the line, but if... Just that you should give your home city a little bit of love if it's a place that you still resonate with.
Well, and that's where I initially took issue with it. I think he was flippant with that. As I've been saying throughout the afternoon, I think we all as Canadians, I know I can speak from my own experience as a born and raised Canadian, I do take issue, even though I probably shouldn't. Everyone's entitled to live their life and do whatever they want.
Right.
And it goes both ways. Americans move up here and become Canadians and associate themselves as Canadians and not Americans anymore. But we have this inferiority complex or maybe a bit of a self-esteem issue when it comes to kind of the brain drain and people going to the States and then making it big down there and forgetting about where they came from.
Right.
And that's what the clip kind of sounded like. Here's Joey Votto, who born and raised in Toronto, grew up here, played here, and now he's Mr. Cincinnati Red and Mr. American, and he doesn't care about Toronto anymore.
Right.
I understand why a lot of people heard that and took issue with that. I find it interesting, based on his apology tour here, where he's come out and said he was jealous of the moment that Paxton got.
Right.
And he was jealous that he had that big moment in Toronto and how he grew up in Toronto, and he's prideful of that, and he grew up a Blue Jay fan. I've always had it wrong when it comes to Votto because I've always been of the impression that he didn't want the accolades here. He didn't want the recognition. He didn't want a profile in Toronto.
Right.
Because I've always believed it would be easy for him to have one here because of who he is and what he represents. Greatest baseball in the history of the city.
Yeah.
Greatest ball player in the history of the city. It's not even debatable. There's nobody close. Won the Lou Marsh twice. This guy could be a poster boy for a lot of companies.
For sure.
And could be on posters all down the Gardner and up and down the DVP and 401 and all that kind of stuff all over the city.
If he had that type of pride, like if he marched it out there.
And maybe he doesn't have the personality for it. And that was always my perception, that he didn't have the personality for it or he didn't want it. He just wanted to be known. He just wanted to be out of the spotlight and wanted to be somewhat anonymous here. But based on those comments, I think I've had it wrong all these years. He wants to be recognized as the great Joey Votto in his hometown, but he doesn't want to be the one that feels like he's got to do it on his own.
The PR machine for himself.
He wants it to happen naturally. He wants it to be organic. He wants to be able to walk down the street and people be like, there's the great Joey Votto. And I sense he kind of resents the city to an extent and the sports fans here because they maybe haven't been giving him that.
Well,
that's kind of what I picked up on.
He didn't do himself any favors on that podcast. Is if he wants that, then you don't go about doing it that way. But maybe this is something that helps springboard him into being a more, recognizable face in this city.
Well, he's the talk of the city now.
He is.
You know?
And I think he's made restitution. I'm fine. He came out and said I was wrong and I apologize.
And he didn't hurt anybody.
He didn't know.
Like, there was no, he said what he said. It's not the end of the world.
Move on. Exactly.
Here's our Jays analyst, Steve Phillips. Steve, obviously you're coming at it from a different view. You're an American guy, but I'm sure you're aware of Votto's comments. This caused a bit of a controversy up here. Have you ever had a situation with the Mets where a guy caused a stir in his hometown or home country and you felt like, uh-oh, this was going to maybe weigh on him and you had to deal with it somehow as the GM?
Well, I'm well aware of his comments. And the one situation we had was back in the strike in 1994, right, in the 1995. We had players who decided that they would sign up to be replacement players, and all of them did it for some reasons or another. I know as part of the Mets organization back then, we kind of manipulated our prospects to try to get them to be willing to participate as a replacement player. Now, the major league players looked at them as scabs, trying to break the union. And we tried to portray it a little bit differently, but it was back then that John Franco made statements like, we'll show them the Bronx, right? We'll show them the Bronx. We'll show them what New York's like for these guys who are breaking the picket line. So, I've had that sort of thing, but not necessarily talking against their city. But, I look at Joey Votto, he's a different guy. Like all along, I've always thought, man, he's just different. And forever, he stayed quiet. He kept to himself. He didn't speak up. And then over about the last year or so, he started to come out of his shell. We saw him interacting with fans differently. We saw him kind of, you know, he bought the donkey for his teammate Zach Cozart. You know, when he said if he made the All-Star team, he'd get him a donkey, and he got him one. And so he started doing sort of these sort of quirky, kind of unique personality, little different things. And I thought, well, he's starting to come out of his shell. He kind of kicked the shell off with this last thing. And, you know, he's just different. And I think that sometimes, because he's been so quiet, he doesn't have a lot of experience about how people are going to react to what he says. And so I think he went out there a little too far, a bit like a bull in a china shop, and then had to try to pick up all the broken glass afterwards.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. He is a bit of a different cat, and I don't think he's overly comfortable with the media, but you're right, he's been doing more and more media. Like, he won a big award up here in December, and he came on our show that day, and it was a really engaging interview, but he had some really interesting things to say, and that was not the case in years past. We had been requesting him for the longest time, and it was always no thank you, not interested, not doing it. Now, because of the blowback, I would expect he probably goes back into the shell. Like, I would think he'll be shell-shocked from this, and I'm not sure he's going to do media anymore because, like, this was all on a Yahoo podcast. Like, I'd never even heard of this podcast before, and it's everywhere. So
yeah,
I'm not sure how he's going to react.
That, you know, typically my experience is when a guy ends up getting himself in trouble, he's like, I'm not going to answer any questions anymore. And they go back into their shell, right? They turtle. They go right back into their shell. He goes and plays first base. I mean, he took some shots at Cincinnati, too. For a guy who has said, I know we're going to rebuild. I'm fine being here. I don't want to get traded. I don't want to waive my no-trade clause. I don't want to go anywhere else. You really don't get to complain then when things don't go that way. You've chosen to stay there. And you knew what the potential consequences could have been. So he was kind of, I think he just, man, the stars and the moon aligned in a certain way that he just kind of let it go and he puked it all out and then afterwards thought, oh boy, what do I do to clean this mess up?
Yeah, no question. With Steve Phillips. So the Jays got a big win in New York against the Mets. They got blown out last night, but the biggest story, I think, today is Jay Happ actually supplied them with some starting pitching. He went 7 innings, only gave up 2 hits, 10 strikeouts. His ERA isn't great, but he's been fairly consistent throughout the year. But the starting staff has been awful. I think it's the 29th-ranked staff in Major League Baseball. Only the White Sox have a worse ERA collectively. We know what's up with Stroman. He's on the DL. What are they going to do here? How can they turn this around? Do you just wait for it to happen organically, or could you see them making some moves?
Yeah, I don't see any moves. I think that you know, I've always looked at it this way, that you know, I can make a trade to improve my team, but unless my good players play well, I'm not going to win. So I can go get a guy, but that's not going to change the fact that if my good players don't play well, we're not going to win. If our good pitchers don't pitch well, I can add another reliever, I can add another starter, but that's not really the answer. I need the other 4 guys or other 5 guys to be able to deliver. And so, you're right, it was the good news for Happ today. Happ actually swung the bat pretty well today, too, with 2 for 3 in the game, scored a couple runs. But I think in the end it comes down to the pitching has to get right. Stroman has to figure it out. Stroman is on the DL. I know they call it fatigue shoulder. He's got a mechanical flaw, and I kind of broke this down. I sent out some pictures on Twitter at Steve Phillips GM. He's doing this year what he did in the beginning of the 2016 season, where he had some struggles early, and I looked at it and then saw an adjustment he made when he started to get locked in at the end of 2016, and he carried that all the way through 2017, and now he's doing it again, this flaw. And what it is that when his leg kick, when his knee comes up over the rubber, so, you know, he starts to turn his body and his knee goes up, and this is particularly from the stretch, when his knee goes up, his hands are going up. His hand and his glove is going up. And what should be happening is when his knee goes up, his hand should be coming down out of his glove to start his delivery. And because he's taking his hands up, he doesn't give himself enough time for the hand to come down around and get on top of his slider and his sinker. And therefore, pitches are elevated. He doesn't have the command and the release point. And so, and I listen, the video is really clear. I sent out some pictures on it, and you can see it. And I'll be surprised if after this 10 days, he doesn't come back with that being fixed, that his hands will no longer go up. And it was clear the adjustment he made in 16. It's clear what he did all last year in 2017, and it's clear what he's doing wrong right now.
Well, the pitching
now, the question is this. Is he doing it because it's just a mechanical flaw, or is he doing it because his arm is hurt or tired or just doesn't have that life to it, and he's trying to generate more energy? I don't know what the cause and effect is, but I know what the symptom is right now that's causing the poor mechanics.
That's where I was heading. Will the pitching coach obviously picked up on something like that, and they'll try and fix it in this little DL stint?
Yeah, I think this is a lot like the Cubs putting Yu Darvish on the DL with the flu. You don't put a guy in the DL for 10 days for the flu, but it allowed them to kind of figure out his mechanics, get him back on track. Is he tipping his pitches? And I think this is the same sort of thing, that it's a reasonable sell to a doctor that he had fatigue or he had inflammation in spring training, that he's not been quite right. Something's not going right. So let's hit the pause button, miss two starts, lock him back in again. I think he'll be back after his 10 days, and I think he's going to be back with repaired mechanics as much as anything.
Everyone's got a Vladdy Guerrero Jr. take. Guy's sitting over 400. He can't stay in Double A, but like, what are they going to do? Move him up to Triple A? Why would his numbers really drop that much in Triple A? Like, what are they going to do here with him, Steve?
Yeah, I think what they're doing is they're going to tap their foot. They're going to look at their watch. They're going to tap their foot, look at their watch, and just hope the calendar gets through until next year. He's tearing it up. There's no question about that. And I've always said this. Players tell you when they're ready for the next level. And certainly guys can jump from Double A to the major leagues, but it's not as simple as that, right? You don't make these decisions in a vacuum. The ultimate question, I wrote about this last week on .ca, is what is the best use of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s service time? Is in his time as a member of the Blue Jays, what is the best usage of that period of time for the organization? And I think the question is this. Is it better for him to help them try to compete for the second wild card spot this year while probably having to learn and play a different position because Donaldson's going to play third, so they're going to have to try to pound a square peg in a round hole, putting Vlad Guerrero maybe in left field, and try to get to the second wild card spot this year, or do they have a better chance of saving the service time now, tacking it on the back end of his time that they control him for 6 years before free agency, and say that in 2024, that's when he's 25 years old, he's going to be his best. They're going to be playing with better players around him and maybe rebuilding the franchise and have a chance where the Yankees and Red Sox have fallen back a bit, and maybe the Jays can win a division, they can go on to win a World Series. What's the best usage of his time? For me, it's to wait. That you can move him to AAA at some point, let him get that experience. I wouldn't call him up at all this year, and I wouldn't call him up until mid-April next year so that he doesn't become a free agent until after the 2025 season instead of after the 2024 season.
Thank you, Steve. Always appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Here's Steve Phillips. So Steve says, buy your time. Take it easy.
That would be...
Let him, you know...
Let him marinate, but... He's thinking like a GM, not a fan, and the fans want him up. But
well, they have to do whatever they think is best for him and the team and the long-term ramifications on bringing him up, et cetera. I understand that. It's obviously way more complicated and deeply layered than, hey, he's really good, I want to see him, and I got tickets for the game this weekend. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's 19.
Yeah, he's going to be here for a long time. But we haven't had a prospect like this in a long time with the Jays. Yeah. And really, the last one we had in the city was Matthews, and Matthews came up right away. He got drafted, and he walked into the league.
Yep.
Like, this guy's even more hyped than Marner was, or Nylander was, or Riley was. I mean, he's the number one prospect in baseball, and he's putting up historic numbers in Double A. So people are aware of it. He's got a name that rings out. Everybody knows the Vladdy Guerrero name.
Well,
we'll see. Craig Button's going to join us in studio. We'll get into what happened last night down in Washington. We'll get into Tom Wilson's post-game comments, tee up Game 3, Vegas and Winnipeg. And later in the hour, we'll get into the story about the guy down in Dallas who's 25 and
decided to play high school basketball.
Yeah. And as a freshman, not a senior, this guy is pretending he's 14 years old.
Yeah,
I wonder what gave it away.
There's multiple layers to that, too.
Yeah, there always is. These kind of stories pop up like every 6 months.
Yeah.
Some guy was like, I'm just going to bring it back to the glory days and pretend like I'm 14.
Crazy.
And it works. Somehow they get in. Yeah. Anyway, we'll tell you about that later in the hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. So I guess Craig will be calling into the show, will not be joining us in studio.
From the couch outside the studio.
He's always here. Like, he's on Bats Hockey, I think, and he's doing all the time.
Yeah, he does the car wash. So I'm sure he'll be in tonight. But the game's not till 9, so I don't know if he's doing TH and then taking off. Who knows?
We haven't talked about the Tom Wilson stuff yet.
Yeah.
So Anton Strålman hit him from behind and got a boarding penalty for it.
Yeah.
I thought, like, Wilson went on and said he got him in the head. He didn't hit him in the head. I thought he hit him in the numbers, and then his head ran into the boards.
Yeah, I think his head was contacted, but it was a boarding penalty.
It was a boarding penalty, absolutely.
I just... Where I saw, I think Wilson was right. If that's him, because of his reputation.
Obviously.
He's earned it. He's earned that reputation.
Yes. Though.
That's one thing we have to lay out there. Tom Wilson, Marchand, they've all earned their reputation.
Kadri, all those guys.
It hasn't just dropped at their feet.
Yeah.
But he said, I want consistency. I was hit like that last night. If that was me doing it.
Well, he's gotten off the hook, though, for bad hits this playoff where he didn't get suspended.
And I think that hit last night was worth at least one game.
I don't think so. I thought Wilson saw him coming, was kind of hoping he wouldn't hit him because of the position he was in. Got him in the numbers.
You don't think so?
I don't think it was a suspendable hit. No, I don't.
I thought it was to send a message one game. It's like he left his feet. Drove his head into the boards, and Tom Wilson could have just lied. If Tom Wilson had lied in the ice motionless, then you're looking at more. But he just said, you know what? I got up and went to the bench like normal people do.
Well, like guys should do as opposed to lying around. But
yeah.
All right, we got Craig on the line. We got Craig Button, our hockey analyst. Craig, you chime in on this. What did you think of the Strålman hit on Wilson?
I'm with you 100%, Brian. I think it was a 2-minute boarding penalty. I thought that Tom Wilson embellished it. And... You know, Tom Wilson to whine and say that if it was him, he would have got more severe penalty. That's not the way the Department of Player Safety works. They look at the act, and then if they deem the act worthy of more supplemental discipline, then they look at the history. Tom Wilson delivered an amazing check on Tyler Johnson earlier in that game. And it was clean. It was textbook check. It was a textbook body hit, and there was no problem with it. And I pointed this out a few times. You know, a few years back, he delivered a big walloping hit. I forget who it was on Philadelphia. And Brendan Shanahan, who was the head of the Department of Player Safety, came out and did a video and said, this is nothing wrong with this hit. And he pointed out that Tom Wilson did everything right. And, you know, Brad Marchand this year got the elbowing penalty. But then there was an incident where what they call accidental contact. And everybody was screaming for him to be suspended. And he wasn't, because it was accidental. So for Tom Wilson to be whining like that, and I think he embellished it, I think the rule book covered it. 2 minutes for boarding.
Yeah. I thought it was quite rich, like the way he ended his post game comments, that it's all about player safety and we want, I mean, come on, dude. You lay out guys all the time. You're not concerned about player safety when you're running guys and when you're
here's what my only thing with that is Tom Wilson. If he does that same hit, he is a lot stronger than Anton Strålman. So, like, it's like Byfuglien. Every time Byfuglien hits, he could hurt somebody because he's just actually physically bigger than people. So that's where I think he's saying, if I do that hit, I probably run Strålman, put him in the 10th row because I'm stronger than him.
But if you're going to use that, then the opposite should be true as well, that if you're that big, you shouldn't go down that easy when you get hit by a guy that's smaller than you.
Yeah.
Like if your size, if you're going to use it to your advantage and also as an excuse as to why sometimes this kind of stuff happens, then you got to be a beast when you get hit.
Yeah.
Like Byfuglien gets run at all the time. He doesn't drop. Like no. Wilson dropped pretty easily last time.
I didn't like the hit. Like, I thought anything, and you guys know where I stand on hitting from behind. I think it's the worst hit in hockey. It is. When the numbers are facing you, and regardless if it's Tom Wilson, Strålman, anybody, Kadri and Wingles, anybody, I don't like it. And that's something the league can clean up. But it wasn't like Stroman skated away. Like, he was penalized on the play. Now, whether you raise that to a level of higher, it's a 5 minute or
doesn't
suspension
sound like
or whatever.
They're gonna do anything.
No,
I haven't heard anything.
They're fine with the penalty on the play.
What do you make of the series in general, Craig? Do you think Washington is going to be worried here, considering it's 2-1 now?
Well, I mean, you're playing a team now that you certainly didn't get the best of them in their first two games, and Washington played really well. But Tampa Bay played a real strong game last night. You know, for me, Vasilevsky was in complete control throughout the game, from the start of the game all the way to the end of the game. You know, Jamie can tell you this, and you know this, Jamie. Some nights you're in the net and you're fighting things and you're just battling to make a save and you don't look as fluid and in its control on every shot. I never saw one instance last night with Vasilevsky where he looked any less than in full control. And, you know, we know how good he is. We know when he finds his level of play that he can be a real significant factor in the game. And I thought he was really good. The other part of the game, we've been talking a lot about Chandler Stephenson and Jakob Brana and Brett Connolly and Devontae Smith-Pelly and Alex Chiasson and Lars Eller. We didn't hear their names very much last night. I didn't think that they gave a real good account of themselves last night in the game overall. And I thought in the games 1 and 2, they were real significant contributors in those two victories. And, you know, conversely, last night, you're looking at Kunitz, who had a real strong game, Callahan, and, you know, that I thought that's the Stamkos, Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Kucherov. I mean, these guys are stars, they're superstars. They performed, they were at elite level, but I thought the next group of players it tilted in Tampa Bay's favor last night.
Game 3 tonight, Winnipeg and Vegas, and go ahead.
Wouldn't you say, Craig, that the first 10 to 15 minutes of this period could be a major factor in the series for Winnipeg? They got to come out and withstand that push that's coming from Vegas.
Yeah, well, Jeff, I mean, you've watched Vegas and you've seen them play a lot. You know, one thing, you want to get off to a good start, whether, and you said this, I've heard you say this many times, you want to get off to a good start at the beginning of the game, the beginning of the period, the beginning of the third period, if it's overtime. So all those things. The one thing about Vegas is, they just don't seem to let up at all. And, like, it just seems that the entire game, you're going to have to weather their attack and their speed and their pressure and their tenacity. I thought Winnipeg did a real good job of it in game one. And, you know, Blake Wheeler, he talked about playing 57 good minutes. You know, I think what we found in these playoffs, 57 good minutes and 3 bad ones against Vegas isn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
you better get 60 minutes under your belt there, young guys, because even though you played 57, the blunders you made were good enough to help you fall on the wrong side. But so that's just I just see a team that is so tenacious and so relentless in Vegas, and I think that Winnipeg has that capability, but you can't lapse in the game, or they're going to take advantage of you.
Well, especially the four teams that are left, a lot of the games, Craig, there's been a bad stretch of hockey, whether it be a period, 10 minutes, and it seems like it's over. There's not comebacks. There's not lead changes. It's like if you fall asleep for 10 minutes, you're done.
Yeah, and that really has been one of, I think, the storylines of this year's playoffs, is that, you know, you score first, you get a lead, and there hasn't been these wild changes in leads, you know, one team taking a lead, the other one coming back for the most part. Now, one of the interesting things, too, about Vegas, when they went into their first round against LA has a tough time scoring, and listening to Vegas after as they've gone through the playoffs and listening to them talk about that series, they said, we knew that LA couldn't score, but we also knew that LA was going to stay in the game because they weren't going to beat themselves. So, you know, that's exactly what Vegas did. They hunkered down and they said, okay, we'll play a 1-0 game. We'll play a low scoring game. That's exactly what they did. So, you know, you talk about that, not having those lapses. I think Vegas has really, really instilled that in their game.
Yeah,
they've been so impressive.
And they're a fast team, too. Like, everything that they do is at a high rate. So you have to be on your game. Like, in breaking down the tape of the Winnipeg, you know, that last game, I thought Winnipeg was a little slow to go back for pucks, and Vegas was all over them. They cut the boards off, they cut any type of options off, and that's how they were able to generate a lot of chances. It wasn't just in the offensive zone. It was in the defensive zone, too. Riley Smith turns that puck over immediately. Transition game up to Carlson, back to Smith, and then over to Marchessault. It's in the back of the net. Like, they are a fast team, and they do everything at a high rate.
Well, it's first goal. It happens in the offensive corner. You know, Tatar's on the play, and then Tatar, they're on him. Theodore jumps down. Tatar goes to the other side of the net. Second goal. Connor's coming out of his zone. That turnover happens in the neutral zone at the red line. And then the one you just pointed it out. That's the way they play everywhere.
Yeah.
And then to your point, you know, whether it's transitioning like they did on the third goal or transitioning on the second goal or transitioning in the offensive zone once you get a turnover on the first goal, I mean, that's the hallmark of their team. And to Jeff's point, you better not doze off. Because if you doze off for half a second, I mean, Paul Stastny has one hand on his stick, like in the corner. And I mean, one hand, and now the puck's off your stick and it's in your net before you can, you know, even think twice again.
Game three tonight, Winnipeg, Vegas. We look forward to it. Enjoy it tonight, Craig. We'll do it again soon. We'll see you soon.
Thanks.
There's Craig Button, our hockey analyst.
Wound up.
I like him in studio better.
He gets the gavel out. That's when he starts banging on the table.
He's very good both. Either on the phone or in studio, but in studio it's a little bit different.
He argues with you better in studio.
Yeah, he does. Although he agreed with me on the Tom Wilson hit.
He did do that.
I'll take that. But you're right. Wow. Usually in studio there's something about he and I looking each other in the eye. It's just my face. He hates it.
He hates your face.
He really does. He really hates my face.
He wants to attack you.
What is it about my face?
He looks at you and attacks you.
Yeah. He wants to do the squat deuce and toss. And he sees your face.
Right to you.
The Tim Hortons.
I watched that video again in the break. I don't know why. It's disgusting.
Why would you watch that woman?
Because I don't understand what has happened to you.
She bellies up to the bar and says, I'm the lady from Tim Hortons that did the wall squat deuce and toss.
Like, that's her Tinder profile?
Yeah.
She's obviously
don't piss me off,
serious,
because I'll wall squat deuce and toss.
It's a pretty good.
And what about that other guy, the 25-year-old in Texas,
in Dallas? So there's a 25-year-old guy. Now he was arrested. Now you told me a detail that I wasn't aware of, which makes it very, very relevant and concerning and understandable why this guy would be arrested. So some guy, 25 years old, from Dallas. He claimed he was a refugee from Houston because of the floods in Houston. He had to flee to Dallas.
Lost his home and everything.
Yeah, so he came up with this big story. His name's Sidney Bouvier Gilstrap Portly. Sounds like a Dickens character.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
1800s London. But he came up with a new name, and he was going by the name of Rashawn Richardson. And he shows up at Skyline High School in Dallas in August and enrolled as a freshman. Not as a senior refugee.
How old is this guy?
He's 25.
25.
So he's got the full facial hair routine going on.
But like, who's letting him in? Like, who's like, okay,
know.
Like
the guy in Windsor, Ontario, did that a couple years ago.
Yes. Oh yeah, that guy was like, I think in his 30s. Like that guy legitimately
he was balling in high school basketball.
But
this guy was too.
Well, but here's the thing: not necessarily. This is the worst part of the story: is that the coach, who thought he was 14, said, quote, he was an average player and a good kid, end quote. If you're 25 playing against 14-year-olds and you're
aren't you supposed
average,
to dominate?
You should be dominating the dojo.
Because you would think that's the only reason he would do this is because he had some false dream of playing in the NBA.
See, right. Where I felt like it took a little turn is he was dating a 14-year-old girl.
Obviously, that's more than just a bit of a turn. That is a full 180.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
You have to give him, throw away the key. This guy, you can't do that, man. Like, my initial thought was, really, you're going to arrest the guy?
I don't even want to talk about it anymore now that I heard the second
one. I know, that
again,
kind of detail.
I didn't read that story. I read that there was, he apparently had gone on dates with because he was acting like he was 15 years old.
He's following through on the story. Like, if you're going to be committed to the character, you got to be committed to the character, I guess. But this guy, and he actually enrolled in another story. He transferred to a different school halfway through the school year, so that I guess maybe they wouldn't be tipped off or whatever. And his old high school coach from his actual high school when he was actually 14. Was the one that spotted him, I guess, at a game and was like, dude, you're 25. You played for me 9 years ago. Cops, like,
Now.
Yeah. Now, this yeah. guy's a fraud.
It is. It's a fraud, and he may have been putting up a facade. Like, in,
well,
it just, it's awful on a lot of different fronts, but, like, how desperate do you have to be?
I know. Like, those are your glory days, being in grade 9 playing basketball as a freshman.
The guy still stunk the joint up.
But you hear about, like, baseball players, especially from the Dominican, you don't know how old they are.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Like, that has been proven before, where guys were lying about their birth certificate.
Let me ask you this, and you think about this. I don't know about you, because you never played in the big leagues. Do you think if your back was good and you got in the gym and got in good shape, and you reported to a Western Hockey League camp this year and tried out and were draft eligible, do you think you could get drafted?
Probably not.
I think if I got in shape and played in the OHL, I could get drafted.
Well, I'm sure if you're at lower levels, you probably could.
I'm talking getting in shape.
No, I know.
You put me in shape and I'm on the card as 17 years old, I think someone would draft me.
I'm sure I could stop pucks. Like, I wouldn't have a problem stopping pucks. But
I know, but do you think Craig Button would go ahead and say somebody should take a chance on this guy?
I don't know, man.
I don't know.
But you guys are old.
Fake, exactly. Like,
you're old.
You know
guys.
How tired, like, I would be, like, going up and
I'm
down
talking
and over.
Gary Roberts shape. Put me in the Mississauga Steelheads. I think a scout would say, "I'm taking a chance. He's only 17. He's going to grow."
But
your three kids are beside you at the draft.
Let's dig up Bobby McKenzie's
scouting report
on O.
When you actually were 18 and in shape.
Like, to take some days off, or what was it?
We've done that 100 times on this show. We need to get some new material.
It's not even.
With all the respect, I don't think you could. The OHL, like, do you know how good those players are?
Do you know how good I used to be?
Yes, 10 years ago when you were still playing. You're not that. You're 42 yeah. now.
I think if I got in tip-top shape, I could get drafted to the NHL.
No, you would get shelled, I think, in the WHL.
I would be fine. But I would be fine on a short-term basis. I could get through a game or two.
Someone would draft him as a sturdy backup. They're needed now.
Sturdy backup.
I don't know what that means anymore. But I think I could stop pucks, like, for a couple days, but then I would get tired and I would get worn down.
These guys, they play 3 games in 3 nights.
Yeah.
Like, if you're the star on the team, you're playing all three games. Watching those games,
it's a lot of it is very scrambly hockey. Like, you look at veteran players, you could figure out, you could be cerebral and think the game ahead of them.
Well, I could be a 7th rounder.
Because for me, it would be positioning.
Because
those guys, like,
the old guy at the gym playing ball, and he sucks, but he's great.
But he knows exactly where to be, right?
Yeah. Just the perfect pick and roll, like
5-on-3 specialist.
Yeah, the old guy at the gym is the perfect scenario because the guy is, he has the mind for it. It's the body's that's broken down.
The fundamentals are textbook.
But the body to do it every day. I don't think I could do it. Nor would I want to.
No. Riding the buses and stuff, dude. You'd have to ride
Not
the buses.
A chance. No
Live
way.
With a billet. Imagine you two idiots
going
in it with
a
billet.
A little bit too far. We're not talking about act. Like, come on.
Would
I'm
you
not
go
doing
through,
it? I'm
would
just
you go
saying.
Through
I
training
think
camp.
I could get drafted.
Could you go through NHL training camp?
Yeah.
No,
you couldn't.
An OHL training camp, I could.
The OHL, they don't have. There's no restrictions. They do 2-a-days in the OHL. They go to school during the day.
Yeah.
You're not making the OHL, man.
You'd be Billy Madison.
Never going to happen.
Running around.
All right. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine and tee up a couple of big games tonight.
Tomorrow we may possibly do a segment about hatred in sports. And who deserves a hashtag wall squat, deuce and toss?
Potentially.
We're going to talk about it, and we're going to create a scenario. What trade would force you into a wall squat, deuce and toss?
Is it like a toilet bowl Tuesday?
It's a step above, clearly.
Could you imagine being so angry with a team, with like a sports executive, that you wait outside the building?
Well, the Italian soccer fans, when they didn't qualify, they all, as a nation, did a wall squat, deuce and toss.
Yeah, they did. You're right. So I guess it has happened before. Like, figuratively, it happens all the time. People lose their minds in pro sports. But what happened in the Tim Hortons out in BC, that is on a different... Like, that's literally a wall squat,
deuce and toss.
Yeah, like there's no getting around it. It's awful.
We're going to do a scenario where we're going to say, does this warrant one or not tomorrow in the 4 p.m. hour?
Cross it over with a yes guy or a no guy. So does
possibly
it,
a yes guy, no guy mixed in with a deuce and toss.
Okay. A wall squat. You got to remember, that's a very
hashtag wall squat, deuce and toss.
Okay. Time now for our hashtag best bets brought to you by ProLine. Under the number in Winnipeg, Vegas tonight. And I'm going to go with a tie, Golden State, Houston. I took a tie in game one, and then Golden State took off late. But I think Houston, I think they respond, I think. I don't know if they're going to win, but I think it'll be close tonight. Throw down 20, you can score 80. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Bit of a bummer that they both started 9 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
So trying to...
We can go back and forth.
Yeah, you got to. What are you going to do?
We're on the panel, but we'll have it on in the background.
Well, and the Jays played earlier this afternoon. They had a big win, so you're not worried about them playing tonight.
They're just above 500, aren't
they? They're a game above 500.
Yeah, so they're hovering.
They are, but like it doesn't matter with what's going on with the Yankees and the Sox. Like they're, you just got to give it up. Those two teams have been so good.
Yeah.
So you're fighting for the second wild card. Can you stay in contention with Houston or the Angels? Seattle's in there, although they took a hit with the Robinson Cano stuff.
I don't think it's out of the question to say not a chance. That's kind of my thinking.
Well,
it's a pessimistic approach, but
3.5 out of the second wild card,
right?
So,
and it doesn't look like there's many things to that are on the rise, or
no.
I mean, what did like, Jay Happ's performance today?
Well, I think the staff will get better. The staff is going to get better. If Stroman gets it together, Sanchez gets on a heater, that is possible. But the bullpen is going to start coming back down to earth. It already has. Osuna, I don't know when he's even going to come back. And the bats were great. They had so many clutch hits early in the season. I think that will even out. So even when the arms start to improve, the bats will probably sink a little bit.
And a guy named Tyler wrote in, if hashtag wall squat deuce and toss does not become a segment, my listening will slow down. So we are coming with that segment tomorrow.
All right, tomorrow. Sure. Hashtag wall squat,
deuce and toss.
We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.